Hi, this is Chud from the Beer Report with Groucho and Chuck. Now, I don't really listen to podcasts because, let's face it, podcasts suck. But when I do listen to a podcast, which is every now and then, I listen to the podcast from BeerSafari.com. It's the absolute best beer shows on the entire internet. So BeerSafari.com, check it out. It's a jungle of beer.
Virgin Atlantic on Sunday carried out the world's first flight of a commercial aircraft powered with biofuel, consisting of coconut and babassu oil. Not to be outdone, Continental is fueling its planes with I can't believe it's not butter.
Everyone, welcome to another exciting, gripping, edge-of-your-seat episode of My Life as a Foodie. My name is Phil, and I am a foodaholic. Not really. Well, kind of. I have this bad habit. I snack at night before I go to bed. I don't know why. I just get hungry before I go to bed. Maybe I think I'm, you know, going to run out of fuel while I'm sleeping. One of the things I love to snack on the most is fruit. You know, I'll cut some fresh fruit up in a bowl. I'll snack on it while I'm watching the news or whatever. It's great. It's healthy. It doesn't give me agita before I hit the sack, you know. Sometimes you'll go into your pantry, you'll eat anything if you're hungry. But fruit's a healthy thing for me, and I really like it. So we're going to celebrate fruit on the show in many forms. Beer, food, everything. You know, if I really wanted to celebrate fruit, I'd invite Father Spoon on the show with me, but he's in Pittsburgh, so we couldn't accommodate that. But we'll just have to, he'll be with us in spirit, all right? So Kirk, I wanted to talk about this for a second. Kirk listens to the show. He's in Germany. He's a friend of Rick and Dick's at Big Foamy Head. He responds on the blog quite a bit. He told me a while back, I guess I commented that, it's about five or six episodes, I think, I commented about, you know, what a great idea the Rhein-Heinz-Gebot was. I probably mispronounced that. Anyway, I talked about what a great idea it was and how, you know, great Germany was that they put that in place, the purity law for beer. And he told me that, you know, he lives in Germany. He's lived in Germany for years. If I ever really wanted to hear his reasons for not respecting it, that he would tell me. So, yeah, I said, well, you know, anytime you want to talk about it, you know, let me know. I'd love to hear it. Because obviously he knows more about it than we do because, you know, he lives there. He let loose on BigFoamyHead.com recently, commented on their homecoming beer show. If you're interested in reading his take on it, it's great. It's in the comments section of the homecoming beer show, BigFoamyHead.com. It's an excellent post, as always. You know, Kirk puts a lot of thought into what he writes, and he's very intelligent. But I had no idea what was happening in Germany. And I guess it's not pretty. Kirk, if what you said is true, I'd take it all back. German beer sucks. So, anyway, it's a fruit show. It includes beer. I do not drink beer with fruit in them, usually. I save that for the women. But I'll do anything for the show, including nudity. So fruit beer is not a really big deal for me. Our first beer that we're going to have two. We're going to have a banana beer and a watermelon beer. So we're going to try the banana beer first. It's Wells Banana Bread Beer. And I got to tell you, I'm a little afraid. I bought this a while back. Look, I bought it kind of as a joke, but then I realized I probably should drink this. I like banana qualities in some beers, like in Bavarian Hefeweizen. I like the subtle banana quality from the yeast. Not necessarily banana in the beer, but the qualities of banana. But, you know, actually drinking a loaf of banana bread, I'm afraid it's going to make me sick. But, like I said, it's, you know, I'm taking one for the team here. So it's made by Wells and Youngs, and this is what they have to say about their beer. This dark golden colored ale hugs the palate with great... This is like so marketing speak. This dark golden colored ale hugs the palate with great intensity. Its malty aroma is complemented by the gentle nose of banana. Its flavor unfolds with a sensual sparkle and a smart crispness, which balances its aroma perfectly. Tropically fruity, I'll bet. Its ripe banana flavor, emphasized by a hint of bitterness, comes from the addition of real fair trade bananas and finishes with an emphatic, steely dryness. Now this is like, I know people who try to write beer reviews like this, I mean, that doesn't sound right. But whatever. Yeah, you got to sell your beer. So it's 5.2% alcohol, and it's a big bastard bottle, too. This isn't like a pint. This is like, I think, 18 ounces. So let me get a glass, and we'll pour this in and try it. Okay, I got the beer here. I was mistaken. I just turned the bottle around. It's 1 pint, 3.25 ounces, so it's 15 ounces. Open this. I realize I'm breaking a show rule that I kind of imposed on myself. I said I'm not going to drink a beer on the show that I have not tasted before, because I'm not in the habit of reviewing beer. I'm not going to review beer on the show. I'm just going to share the beers that I enjoy with you, but this is a new one. I may not enjoy this, and I may have to trash it. I'm pouring it in my tulip glass, and it looks kind of like a nut brown ale. Not really that dark, just kind of an amber. I mean, not really much of a head here, a little bit. Oh my God, does it smell like bananas? It almost smells, it almost has that same banana quality that a Hefeweizen, a Bavarian Hefeweizen would have. Or if you took a beer and you fermented it at like 92 degrees. Okay, it's not bad. It's not bad. It smells of more banana than it actually has in the beer. It's nice. It's kind of, yeah, I could see this being a refreshing beer. The head just went away. There's no head on here. I mean, I had a little foam. I poured it heavy, too. I mean, I really went for it. Interesting. Will's Banana Bread Beer. I don't think I'd drink more than one of those. All right. Well, there's that. Oh, my God, it gets worse. Yeah, I make a list of all the things I'm going to do on the show, and I go over it while I'm like, while I'm talking. Oh, by the way, mention this. Next on the list is durian. What the hell am I doing to myself? Oh, boy. Well, we'll continue with the fruit theme then. I can't say I've been looking forward to it as much as I'm actually looking forward to saying that I've tried it. It's like I want to say I've had it, but I'm really not looking forward to having it. Durian. Now, you may know what this is, but for those of you that don't, it's a fruit that stinks. This is always a show of firsts for me, all right? Because it's still kind of a young show, so everything I do is going to be kind of new. And I've never had durian, and I'm going to eat some. I got two kinds of durian here. I got one as an ice bar, and then one is the custard from the inside of the fruit that they've frozen. Now, I've watched Bourdain eat it. I've watched that penis eater, Andrew Zimmern, eat it, so I guess it's my turn. Durian is actually it's from Southeast Asia. They call it the king of fruits, which is what they used to call Father Spoon when he was growing up. But I digress. No way was I really going to buy a whole durian, because they're massive, and they're kind of expensive. And I love the show, but, you know, come on, F you guys, man. I have my limits. It's supposed to stink like trash and rotting flesh. Well, that sounds delicious, doesn't it? Ugh. They say they stink so freaking bad, you're not even supposed to open one in a closed room. They won't even give you a taxi ride in Asia if you're carrying one. Anyway, I put some pictures, a little slideshow on the website, and I think the very first picture is the actual durian fruit, a bunch of them together. And the durian fruits are, they have a real hard husk on the outside, and it has these really big thorns, and then you crack it open, and then there's this gooey custard on the inside. It's supposed to taste different than it smells, which I really hope is the case. So what I have here are both the frozen custard from the durian fruit, as well as some bars that are made with 100% durian. What they do from the bars, they take the custard out of the fruit, they freeze it, and then they form it into bars. So I guess the custard, I don't know if this is mixed with anything, it says 100% durian fruit, so I don't know if one's going to be different than the other. Nothing added. It says it right here on the box. I tried one of the fruit bars before, and I have to say, it was a little weird to eat it. It wasn't horrible, but about halfway through it, I didn't want to finish it. Here it goes with the custard. I'm going to open this. Durian on my life as a foodie, soon to be my life on the toilet. Okay, it's all wrapped in this little packaging material. Just peel it back. It looks kind of like lemon, almost. I'm going to do this. Take a little piece of it off with a spoon. Okay, here we go. Let me smell it. Well, it doesn't smell like much of anything. It's a little, it smells kind of like fruit, like a light fruit flavor. Hmm. Yeah, it tastes like the other one. Well, you know what? That's not bad. It's kind of nice. I don't know how to describe that. Maybe because it's ice cold, it doesn't have a real stink to it. It smells kind of like, I want to say it smells like socks. Not like socks, like you've been wearing socks. But like when you pull fresh socks out of the drawer and you smell them, you smell like socks. They're not like bad feet socks, but they smell like, it's kind of like what it smells. It smells like socks. Clean socks. But it tastes, I don't know, it tastes like socks. I'm not going to eat the rest of this. Because I have to do a show, and I can't eat on the show. Hmm. Well, I don't know. I wouldn't go through the expense again if I had to, like, actually go buy a whole one. I don't know what the attraction is to that, but it's okay. It's nothing to be afraid of. It couldn't be horrible, because, you know, if Bourdain's eating it, and it's not killing him, and people eat it all the time, it can't possibly be, like, bad for you. Just kind of hard to get over the smell, I guess, but then again, that didn't stink too bad. It smelled a little weird. Anyway, you're going to love this. On my last episode, I was bitching about how annoying the bleeping was on Top Chef. And a lot of you were kind of in agreement with me on this because, you know, we all said either leave the cursing in, as it is, edit it all out, or have them just use alternate words for all the curse words that don't make it past the censors. Because the constant beeping is just a real pain in the f***ing ass. And as I said, you'll all agree, this is really annoying. It's funny, but it's annoying to listen to. So last week, this interview from BravoTV.com was posted, and Tom Colicchio, who's a co-host and the head judge on the show, is asked about the excessive cursing on this season of Top Chef, and here's what he had to say.
You and I have talked about this, and you've been interviewed about it, about the cursing in the season. I mean, is that how kitchens are all across the country in restaurants, or?
I think, you know, there's definitely colorful language in kitchens, yeah. but again, I think this is more generational than anything else. I think this is a product of cable TV, right, where you're seeing, you know, some people like, you know, Jon Stewart's, you know, cursing, yeah, on a show. And that's fine. I think that people are growing up in a different age where, yeah, you know, years ago, if you were doing an interview with a reporter or on camera, you would never dream of cursing.
Yeah, right.
You edit yourself.
Yeah, right.
And for some reason, this day and age, people just think that they don't have to, and I guess that's okay.
Yeah.
But, you know, it is kind of hard when you have a lot of young kids who, you know, at some events and stuff, I'll have young kids, 8, 9 years old, will come up to me and say, I love the show. Before watching the show, I was a very picky eater. Now I eat everything. I want to, yeah, learn how to cook. And it is tough when their parents come and say, you know what, they can't watch it anymore.
Now, there's a point he made that I hadn't really considered. It's a show that kids are actually watching, and it's getting them interested in food, cooking, and even considering becoming a chef. So the cursing is perhaps a serious detriment to the show, and maybe they should consider cutting the sections of the show out that have all that cursing in it. Anyway, that's interesting, but there's more to this story. Look what fell into my lap. An unedited version of Hell's Kitchen, Episode 1 of Season 2. Now, I don't know how long the show has been on. I tried to watch it this season, just couldn't do it. Gordon Potty Mouth Ramsay. He curses like a freaking sailor to begin with. He ups the ante on this show that he does on Fox. It's on Fox on Tuesdays. And like I said, you know, I tried to watch it, but the cooks, I refuse to call them chefs. The cooks seem like rejects from Top Chef. They seem like rejects from Denny's. I mean, you couldn't possibly make it on Top Chef, so you try this show out. And that's how it seems to me. Real, I don't know where they find these people. I'm surprised that they could actually have jobs as line cooks. You know, are they pulling them from Fred's Diner? Anyway, I cut the hell out of this because it originally went for like 6 minutes. And I figured you would just tune out if I played the whole thing. So I chopped it down to just the juicy bits. So listen to what Hell's Kitchen would sound like, completely uncensored. And I have to warn you, this is not safe for work. My show generally is not safe for work anyway, so you should already know better. But definitely don't. If you're at work, you listen to this, turn it off. Listen later, because he's going to throw down the F-bomb gauntlet.
What is that, man?
It's butterfly shrimp and chocolate sauce.
Oh, fucking hell. Get me back to London. And what's all the little bits on the lemon?
That's a chili pepper. I wouldn't eat it if your mouth is on fire, sir.
No, sweetheart. My mouth's fucked. It's not on fire. It's fucked. Fuck me. Whose is this?
It's mine.
Just explain to me what it is, please.
It's an undone focaccia bread with a garlic dipping oil.
Undone? What does that mean, undone?
It means it's not done.
Oh, so half-baked focaccia bread. Oh, my God. Right now, I'd rather eat poodle shit than put that in my mouth.
Chocolate raspberry empanadas.
Oh, fucking hell.
Being an asshole to be an asshole, I'll be an asshole myself.
So far, some really shit cooks, but one honest one. What is it?
It's my coconut and pomegranate celery root salad.
And what's cooked on the plate?
The nuts are toasted.
The nuts are toasted?
Yes.
Oh, fuck me. We've toasted nuts for 29 minutes and then grated a coconut. Tom.
Yes, chef.
You're sweating in the fucking food. We're in danger of being closed down before we even open. Get it in the bin and start again.
Yes, chef.
This is fucking real. I'm shaking.
Right now, I want the starters out, yeah? I don't give a fuck if I have to do them myself. The first ticket, yes? Because I'm fucking seriously pissed.
I just want more pumpkin, that's all I want.
Right, well, I'll get you more pumpkin. I'll ram it right up your fucking ass. Would you like it whole or diced? Oh, my God almighty. You're about as far away to your own restaurant as I am from fucking home. Madam, this has been open for an hour and a half. We have served fucking zero.
Yes, chef.
Heather, get on the fucking appetizers.
Yes, chef.
Can I have a spaghetti, one salison jack, one risotto, and one fucking tempura?
Yes, chef. Yes, chef. 3 minutes, chef.
I'm standing here, and you're there. And I know the fucking thing's off from here. Let me just tell you something.
Yes, chef.
You're not a fucking cheerleader.
No, no.
Just stop acting like one, because we have got nothing to fucking smile about.
I feel like a little worm on a big fucking hook right now.
Just take one good look at yourselves in the mirror, because it's a fucking disgrace.
That's entertainment. Yeah, baby. Ooh, I'm exhausted. Exhausted from all the F-bombs, F-words. Oh, that's reality television, man. Imagine if Fox actually played that. I have absolutely no idea how they got this tape. But it's on YouTube. I love YouTube, man. You can get anything on YouTube. Anyway, that's what these food shows would sound like if they went uncensored. And I think, he does overdo it. Ramsay overuses the F-bomb a lot. I mean, I love to drop it when I need emphasis, but I think he does it for shock value. And can I ask you something? Why does risotto find its way on Ramsay's menu every time he does a show? I mean, do people really like risotto that much? Is it a European thing? I don't see it a lot on American menus. It's on American menus. I just don't see it a lot. And I wonder if he puts that on his menu because it's something that kind of takes a little skill to get just right, and it's a gauge. You know, you can gauge whether or not they're good cooks. It's like if you want to see how good a person is in the kitchen, ask them to roast a chicken for you or cook an egg. You know, those are two things that are very simple, and it's something every chef should be able to cook for you just right every time. You know, risotto, I kind of see as one of those things because I just don't enjoy it, and I don't see it on a lot of menus. I mean, it's on menus. I just don't see a plethora of it. Anyway, if you're still listening, our feature on the show is fruit because it's getting warm, and there's a lot of fruit in season. Wimbledon is coming up soon, and it's a tradition to eat strawberries and cream at breakfast for the Wimbledon finals. Now, you don't have to wait for the tennis match to eat this. You certainly don't have to eat it for breakfast. It can be a dessert or whatever. But it does taste fantastic, especially when you incorporate a nice crepe with it. And that's what we're going to do here. We're going to make crepes today. They're really easy to make, and they're impressive when you do make them and you make them right. They're like a really thin pancake, and you can fill them with whipped cream, macerated fruit, whatever you like. And macerated fruit and whipped cream is pretty much what we're going to do here. They're delicious. They're easy to prepare. They're really nice to be able to make for your guests or your wife or whatever. I swear, you pull this off, and she's going to really dig it. Your kids are going to love it. It's fun, and it's very sweet. To make crepes, all you need is this. You need a cup of all-purpose flour, 2 eggs, 1 cup of milk, 1/4 teaspoon of salt, and 2 tablespoons of melted butter. That's it. That's all you need to make crepes. So if you want me to walk you through this, I'm going to do that now. We start by sifting flour into a mixing bowl. You can either use a sifter or a metal wire strainer. You just want smooth flour, no lumps. Add a pinch of salt, add the eggs, half the milk, stir with a wire whip until it's smooth, and then add the remainder of the milk and the melted butter. And if you want to make it easy on yourself, mix it in a blender, because you can do this in a blender. Just put all the wet ingredients in first and the seasoning, and then add the flour in batches. Blend for a few seconds, add a little more flour, blend it, add some flour, keep blending. You just don't want lumps. You want to blend it until it's nice and creamy, and it's easily done in a blender. Now, to cook them, you make them just as you would pancakes, except that it's a really large pancakes and it's really thin. You can use a regular Teflon frying pan, or if you're fancy, you pick up a crepe pan. They're not expensive. You can find them pretty much anywhere that sells cookware. Get the pan really hot on medium heat. Add a little bit of butter to the pan to give a little lube, and then pour about a quarter cup of the batter in there and wait and tilt the pan around to distribute it in a big wide area until you've made a really large circular pancake. Now, we're not making thick pancakes here, so you know we don't want to pour too much into the pan. Start with a quarter cup and go from there. Trust me, you're going to make some big fat ones when you're just starting out, but that's okay. It takes a few tries to get the consistency down, but once you know how much batter to add, it's just an absolute cinch. It's a really simple, easy thing to do. If you can make pancakes, you can make crepes. Cook the crepe for about 2 minutes until the bottom starts to turn brown. Loosen it with a spatula, turn it, cook the other side, and then take it off carefully. Continue making the rest of the crepes until you've got, you know, however many you want, 6, 8, 12. I think the recipe that I'm giving you will make 8 crepes. Should make about 8 crepes. Now, for the filling, the sky's the limit. You can do anything you want. You don't necessarily have to make a dessert out of this or a breakfast dish. You can fill them with cream cheese and salmon. You can fill them with anything you like, but with this one we're going to do strictly with fruit. So you can pick anything you like: berries, strawberries, blueberries, whatever you like that you can get fresh right now. Strawberries are still in season here. If you're using strawberries, slice them, then in a bowl mix 2 tablespoons of water and 4 tablespoons of sugar until you get most of that sugar dissolved, and then pour that over the strawberries. Cover them and allow them to sit in the refrigerator for at least an hour. When you pull these out, the strawberries or whatever berry you've decided to use should be kind of swimming in a pool of juice, sweet juice. This is kind of like the nectar, and we're going to pour this over the top of the crepe to kind of give it a nice sweet balance. Now, here's the bitch. We're going to make whipped cream. Now, this is the toughest part of this whole thing. We're not going to buy Ready Whip or Miracle Whip or whatever that shit is in the frozen section that has high fructose corn syrup in it. That's nasty. Don't put it in my recipe. We're not going to use it here. What we're going to do is we're going to see how much power you have in your forearms. We're going to make whipped cream. It's easy to make. Chill a stainless steel bowl, a clean stainless steel bowl or a glass bowl, whatever you have, and chill your whisk and put the cream, whole cream, in the refrigerator or the freezer for about 10 or 20 minutes. Get them nice and cold, but no, don't freeze the cream. As it turns out, cream is actually easier to whip when it's really, really cold. So you want it to be as cold as you can get it. Everything needs to be cold. It will actually foam up a lot easier. Take everything out of the freezer, pour the cream in the bowl, start whisking. You hold the whisk kind of like a dagger. You hold it down with the wire part pointing down, and then use your wrist and your elbow for motion. Don't use your shoulders, you're going to wear yourself out. Just stick the whisk in the bowl at an angle, draw through the cream in quick, sharp motions, and then alternate between circular motions and then straight motions. And you can switch hands if you get tired. It takes about 3 to 4 minutes to actually whip 1 cup of cream. At first, when you first start, bubbles will appear on the surface of the cream. Then it'll start to become foamy. Then it'll start to really build in volume and thickness. You want it to be pretty thick, kind of like shaving cream. Add a little bit of sugar. Start with about 1 tablespoon and keep whipping. Stop and taste it. If it's sweet enough, but not too sweet, you're good. If not, add a 1/2 teaspoon, whip it up, taste it again. Keep going like that. Go easy until it's just right. Don't put too much sugar in at once, because then it'll get too sweet, and then you're kind of screwed. You want it a little, not too sweet, but not really tart either. It's just kind of in the middle. That's whipped cream. Now, if you want to do it the right way, if you're rich, or you happen to have some nice friends who love you and buy you nice things at Christmas or birthday gifts, you might have a KitchenAid mixer like me. In that case, so long, wire whisk. I put the cold cream in the cold bowl, I attach my cold whisk attachment, turn the mixer on 4, and let the mixer do all the work for me. Now, seriously, you'll love life when you're making everything without having to work too hard in the kitchen. That's how I made my whipped cream, and we've got freshly whipped cream now. We've got these berries or strawberries that we've been soaking in sugar and a little bit of water. Stack of crepes, and we're ready to go. You lay a crepe on a plate, Add a couple tablespoons of the freshly whipped cream right down the center of the crepe. Spread it into a long line of cream. Add some berries on top of the cream. Put a little juice in there, not too much, just a little. And then roll the crepe into the filling so it looks kind of like a burrito. And put it folded side down right on the plate. Top it with a little dollop of the cream. And then take some of that juice from the berries. Pour that over the top of the crepe. And then garnish with a few more of the berries. I am telling you, all you guys out there, you make this for breakfast for your wife. She will love you long time.
Me love you long time.
That's right. Crepes, done easy. It's not a hard dish. It's very delicate looking, and it's great. And, you know, I'll tell you, man, you can fill these things with anything you want, really. Anything that would go well with pancakes will go well with crepes. How are we looking on this banana beer? Still here. I wish I didn't have so much of it. Yeah, it's nice. Well, in case you don't know, and my audience is pretty damned intelligent, a lot smarter than me. I'm sure you're all aware of this. The Summer Olympics are being held in Beijing, China this year. And with all the crises surrounding China, one major crisis is the fact that there are health scares all over the place. Disease outbreaks constantly. There's word that there's issues with their food. Thousands of people getting sick. Air quality's crap. They have lead poisoning. Deaths, plagues. They just had a massive freaking earthquake. You name it, it's happening. I mean, it's a major concern, especially for athletes, this food crisis. So every time you turn around, there's another protest concerning Beijing, free Tibet, human rights violations, whatever. All eyes are on China right now. So here's China trying to do damage control by showing the world that they're using these organic farms to produce fruits and vegetables for the athletes and assuring them that they'll have safe meat and produce to eat.
This is unlike almost any other farm in China. A high-tech greenhouse where the air and water quality is closely monitored and the fertilizer is mostly organic, because what's grown here is destined for Beijing's Olympic Village, and the Chinese are desperate to reassure the world's elite athletes that the food they eat this August won't make them sick. Manager Lin Yuan proudly boasts it took 2 years to meet the strict standards demanded by games organizers. We followed all the rules and were often inspected. That's why I'm so confident about the quality, he told me. China has almost 200 million farms, mostly small family plots, and methods are crude. Just 36 companies were selected to supply fruit and vegetables for the Olympics. They all test for chemical residue. The produce is electronically tagged, tracked from packaging to storage and then transportation. If there's a problem, Mr. Lin says, it can be traced to the exact greenhouse. There will be similar procedures put in place for meat, fish, and dairy suppliers as well.
If the Chinese thought all of that would be enough to calm nervous athletes and coaches, well, they were wrong. The U.S. Olympic team, for one, is planning on bringing a lot of its own food and will have its own facilities for preparing meals.
Beijing officials reacted to that news like a host stood up for dinner. Personally, I express regret since we have done a lot of preparation, she says. In a country where mass outbreaks of food poisoning are relatively common, Beijing faces a massive task, ensuring thousands of gallons of milk, hundreds of tons of fruit and vegetables, seafood and meat are all safe for athletes, coaches and officials. The Chinese have built some of the most impressive Olympic venues in the world. The next goal, they say, is to ensure there's an Olympic menu to match.
Listen, I know it sure seems rude for us to say thanks, but we'll bring our own food. But you kind of have to swallow a little bit of pride here. Understand something. Admit that you haven't done a whole hell of a lot to assure the world's best athletes that they're not going to show up and get poisoned or sick in your country. I mean, hell, they get poisoned in their own country. They don't even provide their own food, then they get poisoned. A few years ago, this is a true story, the Lakers were visiting Portland in the Western Conference Finals, back when Shaq was on the team. Kobe Bryant is in his room, orders a hamburger from room service. 4 hours later, he's up all night with food poisoning, coming out of both ends. Now, he wasn't going to point a finger at the hotel staff, but you'd think if there was a rampant case of food poisoning going on, it would have happened to more than just Kobe Bryant. So he said, from now on, if I want a hamburger, I'll just go to McDonald's. I think just having the team provide its own food should be sufficient. There shouldn't be a problem. I mean, why take chances? If you can do it, do it. It's your body. I mean, these people train for years to get to this stage. They travel halfway across the world. Why take chances with your food? Do what you want. If you insult them, sorry. I mean, how do you say no offense in Chinese? However. So anyway, continuing with our fruit theme, we're going to hit another fruit beer here. Hopefully get rid of that taste of durian out of my mouth. Oof. I rarely do more than one beer on the show, but again, constant show of firsts. Next beer we have here is 21st Amendment's Watermelon Wheat, which is unique in a lot of ways. It's actually one of the first craft beers to actually be canned. 21st Amendment's here in San Francisco, they can their beer. In the past, if you canned beer, it was kind of seen as inferior because cans were kind of said to impart a nasty taste to the beer after having had contact with it after a while. Well, technology is kind of an interesting thing, see? Now cans are lined with an acrylic substance, and it protects the beer from actually touching the aluminum. Just like everything, they find a way to make even canned beer a little bit better, so you gotta love that. So cans, I think, are better for a lot of reasons. I've been a big proponent for canned craft beer for a long time, even though it's more expensive because there's an outlay of materials and equipment right away, but it, in the long run, it's cheaper for these breweries to actually can their beers. My favorite reason why you should can your beer is because light can't get to it. You know, if you had cans of this stuff sitting around and sunlight got to it, it's not going to skunk the beer as much as it would skunk a beer if it was in the glass. And as you know, sunlight is bad for hops in beer. It'll turn the beer into skunk piss if the beer stays in contact with light for, you know, too long. So drink the Coronas as quickly as you can, okay? 21st Amendment. They are located in San Francisco. The brewmaster is Sean O'Sullivan. He's not just a talented brewer, he's a hell of a good guy. I mean, he's a really good guy. Most brewers are a really good guy, and they're usually funny, and he's both. He's a regular on the Brewing Network, which is where I found out about 21st Amendment. So I'm up there. I visited the brewery. We had dinner. I saw the brewery, very nice, small, quaint, very much the epitome of a craft brewery, and I bought some six-packs of his beer, and they're both in cans. Now, it's been a few months since I was there, so the beers have undergone a few changes. He's actually got new cans now, and they can their IPA. They call that Brew Free or Die IPA. And this watermelon wheat that we're having here, it's now called Hell or High Watermelon Wheat. 5.5% alcohol, 17 IBUs. So let's crack a can. Oh, fucking hell.
Get you a beer!
Ugh, I'm gonna be bloated. This was such a bad idea, dude. Drinking two beers and durian. No, this is really interesting. It's a wheat beer, okay? It's really light. I mean, it looks almost like a wit. It's really light. There's literally no color to this. Cloudy like a wheat beer should be. Smells like watermelon. Not hardcore, though. You know, you'd think, like the banana beer, it smelled like I was in the Congo. This is very subtle. They use 400 pounds of fresh watermelon in each batch. That's what they say. It smells like summer. No, it's nice. It's smooth. Watermelon's not even up in your face, you know? You'd think it would be, and it's nice. Same thing with that banana beer. It smelled heavy of bananas, but when you tasted it, it was very light and subtle. That's an interesting way of... I guess when it ferments a lot of the fruit flavor out. Depends when you put it in. I like it. It's got a nice, subtle essence of watermelon. It's dry and clean like a wheat beer should be. Good American wheat. I'm not a big fan of American wheat beers. This is big for me. Not saying it's a great beer because I like it. I'm just saying it's big for me to actually find an American wheat beer that I really like. Gumball Head from Three Floyds is another one. My God. Maybe the best American wheat beer out there. That's just a strict American wheat beer. It's a highly hopped American wheat. It's fantastic. It's almost like an IPA that thinks it's a wheat beer or a wheat beer that thinks it's an IPA. Unbelievable. Anyway, check out 21st Amendment. 21stAmendment.com. 21st-amendment.com. So one of the things that I love about doing this podcast, one of the things I love the most is the interaction that I have with everybody on the blog, on the confrontation board, everywhere. I appreciate comments that I get a lot. I mean, I cherish them because it's an indicator that someone's listening. But more importantly, especially to the show, you guys manage to post links to other articles or videos online that I might find interesting, like the video of the cattle slaughter. What was that? The cattle slaughtering plan in, I think it was in Chino. That was a lot earlier this year. One of you, I don't remember who it was now, it was because it was so long ago, posted that video right after I talked about mad cow disease. It was early on. And that story became huge within a week. And it caused a major ruckus. I can't remember who posted it. Anyway, a couple of you, Chris from Pittsburgh and Bubby from Brain Gravy, both sent me a link to a great article that I really enjoyed. I want to discuss it. Apparently, and I don't know if he's doing this for publicity or if he's being dead serious, and I hope he's serious because it's kind of a brilliant idea. Gordon Ramsay told the BBC that fruit and vegetables should be locally sourced and only on menus when in season. Now, I think he'd already spoken to Prime Minister Gordon Brown about outlawing out-of-season produce anyway, but he said it would cut carbon emissions as less food would be imported, and then it would also lead to an improved standard of cooking.
Chefs should be fined if they haven't got ingredients in season on their menu. I don't want to see asparagus on in the middle of December. I don't want to see strawberries from Kenya in the middle of March. I want to see it homegrown. There should be stringent laws, fined, you know, licensing laws to make sure that this produce is only used in season and season only. And the quicker we get that legislation pushed through, you know, the Houses of the Parliament, then the more, you know, unique this country will become in terms of its sourcing, its level of inspiration, and really understanding those seasonal aspects, which makes it 10 times more exciting for punters.
I swear to God, I have grown to like this guy more and more. He's a talented chef to start with. And the BBC version of Kitchen Nightmares is maybe one of my favorite food shows on television. But this just endears me more to him because, remember that whole discussion we had several episodes ago about carbon footprints on food? Well, that's kind of the point he's making here, and it's brilliant. It's a great way to bring that point home. Well, I think actually finding a restaurant seems a bit harsh, but you know, you have to do what you have to do to get your point across. I'll tell you this: with the amount of trouble that this whole trans fat law created here in New York, they told New York restaurants that they had to eliminate it from their menus. I mean, I seriously couldn't see a law like this passing here in the United States. So we eat shit for breakfast, lunch, and dinner. And I don't think the vast majority of American public seriously cares where their food's coming from. You know, they just want to eat, and then they want to go. And it's sad. So, cheers to Gordon. It seems that Britain has a way of attacking these problems with, you know, some sense of solution. They might seem harsh, but it's a solution, and it would be interesting to see if this gains any momentum. Anyway, I am fruited out, my friends. I have had a lot of fruit beer. I ate some durian, which wasn't that bad. Maybe when it's fresh and warm, maybe it stinks like rotting flesh. But luckily, it didn't stink for me, and it was doable. I won't say to go out and get durian. If you want to impress your friends, go buy some and eat it. Anyway, that's it for me. I appreciate you tuning in again. This has been My Life as a Foodie, and we'll see you guys next time. Ciao.
Hi, this is Groucho. When I'm not making a podcast, I enjoy listening to podcasts on BeerSafari.com. BeerSafari.com, it's a jungle of beer.